Welcome to episode 229 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
There are lots of links with more information available on the show page today. You can find that by visiting thelabwithbrad.com. We talked on Monday.
Yes, we did. So I've discovered the problems with this news idea that I had.
Yeah?
All right, because...
Okay, well, first off, Phil had a news idea. he gives some science news thing, and right. For once, he could say a bunch of things that he doesn't quite understand, and I could do color commentary.
And it'll especially be not understood, because all I'm going to do is share the news story and then not know anything else. But problems with news on a podcast that's recorded and shared later. Case in point, on Google Trending right now is there's going to be a meteor shower tonight, Monday to Tuesday. What is it, 29th to 30th?
That would have been a great thing to talk about last week.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Give people a heads
up. This is coming. But no, that's not how I react to the news.
Meteor showers. You know where?
Twice. Yeah. Two times two, apparently. There's going to be two of them competing with each other. The moon's not out, so it's a great time to go out and watch them.
But by the time you hear this, it will have come and gone.
Yeah. See? That's terrible.
Ask me where meteor showers come from.
Where do meteor showers come from?
Mostly comet debris.
Comet debris. They hit the asteroid belt?
No.
No?
No, nothing.
Oh, wait, just their tails.
Just their tails. Oh. Leaving crap behind. And we go drifting through those orbits, and there they are.
Huh. There is a near miss recently that happened, last week sometime. You see? News. We're right on top of it.
Let's talk about what happened last year.
But it came between us and the moon, or at least distance-wise. I don't know if it actually passed between us and the moon. And it was a city killer size?
Hmm.
Yeah. And the big news about it is that nobody really saw it until it was already... Yeah, it was like the day before, and they're like, oh, shit.
Oh, what?
Oh, crap. Where'd that come from?
I remember a few years back, they were watching one, and they knew this one was coming, right? And it was passing closer to us than our geosynchronous satellites orbit.
Whoops.
So, you know, they're keeping an eye on that one. And from an entirely different direction, one flew in and exploded over a Russian city.
Oh, that's when that happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So talk about not seeing all the rocks. Everybody was busy looking at this one. It was apparently a distraction.
And is our nephew seeing a bear count as news?
Well, no. But he did. So, yeah, I put something on Twitter. Linda, our sister,
yes,
replied. I guess she's seen two bears this year so far.
Two bears?
Two bears. The bears. Anyway, we are going to talk about plants.
Yes.
And plant communication.
Mm-hmm.
And even plant memory.
Yes.
Pickles.
Because we're going to talk about plants, we decided to torture a pickle.
We wanted to see if the other pickles in the jar would get nervous. And how do you tell the difference between a regular pickle and a nervous pickle?
Big news is we forgot to hook up the other pickles, but they look nervous to me. Yeah. It glowed. Once upon a time, I did this with pickles before.
Right.
Same way.
I was there.
Yeah.
So was Paul.
We don't recommend plugging pickles into a wall socket unless you know what you're doing.
Yes. Don't try this at home thing.
Yeah.
Usually when people do this experiment, we're talking like, a 9-volt battery maybe?
Yeah, or a battery charger or, you know, something less powerful than house current.
Right. So you'll get it glowing on one end. Mm-hmm. Or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because that's where the hydrogen is collecting.
Yeah, it's a DC circuit.
What you're seeing is hydrogen and oxygen being split apart in water.
Mm-hmm.
And then once it gets hot enough, the hydrogen that's collecting starts to light up. Yeah. And it does it over and over again. You see these pretty little sparks, and they all hang around the one contact.
Uh-huh.
In our case, it's a nail.
Yes.
But we plugged it into house current.
Yes.
Again, don't do this unless you have some clue what you're doing.
We had a switch involved in the circuit. You know, it's not like we just plugged a pickle directly.
And under no circumstances do you touch the pickle while it is glowing or steaming or the switch is on.
Yeah, you might be the path of least resistance. That would suck.
But anyway, house current is 60 cycles a second. It's alternating current.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So instead of having positive on one end and negative on the other, you've got positive and negative wibbling back and forth on both.
Mm-hmm.
Or one that goes, I'm confused about which one goes where and why and how exactly. Ground, mystically, sucks up energy.
Ground is actually a side note to this, because like the actual ground that's wired to the panel,
mm-hmm.
I helped put in the panel downstairs, and we jackhammered a like 15-foot rod into the ground.
And thus the name.
And hooked up the ground for the panel to that. But that is not... That's the ground in your plug, but you have three holes, and then there's a left side hole and a right side hole, and I don't remember which one's which, but one of them is hot, and the other one, he said, was neutral, which is not the same as ground. It's part of the alternating circuit, alternating power, what the heck?
Alternating current.
Alternating current. It's part of that circuit. Yeah.
Huh.
So it goes back to the panel, not the ground.
See, now we probably shouldn't have done this. As you can tell, we don't really know what we're doing.
But there was a switch.
But again, we find come to find out that once you turn it on,
mm-hmm.
only one side glows.
Yes.
Only one, all the arcing and barking and sparking
mm-hmm.
is next to one of the nails.
Yes.
But we discovered, through some experimentation,
mm-hmm.
that it might have something to do with the shape of the pickle.
Because you take same said pickle that glowed on, say, the left side and rotate it, and two out of three times, the side that it originally rotated on, relative to the pickle, still glows, even though you flipped it around.
Right. So if the left nail had been where the arcs and barks and sparks were,
mm-hmm.
it will be the right nail now.
Yes.
But it's still the same side of the pickle, because we swapped the... Yeah. Rotated it, like you said.
Yes.
Every time you say that, I picture it rotating along the long axis, which would make no difference at all.
Well, you make new holes. That's the other problem, is I didn't reuse the same holes. This is not scientific.
Yeah, sure it is. Just not very good science.
I don't know where these chicken feathers are coming from, but... Okay.
Chicken feathers?
Yeah, chicken feathers. Okay, right side. Off. Wait for it to cool down. And rotation. New holes. Wow, this pickle's getting soft. Right side. Yeah, the first pickle doesn't care. The other pickles we rotated, it changes which side the glows.
Yeah. Anyway, my guess is that the 60 cycles per second,
mm-hmm.
that's how often house current wibbles.
Mm-hmm.
Sets up sort of a standing wave, or at least an averages out to a standing wave,
mm-hmm.
so that the positive is more mostly on one side and the negative is mostly on the other.
Right.
Which would have to do with the shape of the pickle.
This is what we're thinking.
Yeah, this is what we're thinking. And so that's how you end up with the glow being predominantly on one end of the pickle rather than the other. But we don't really know.
Yeah. If we were real scientists, we'd be excited by this. This is weird. Well, you need to follow up with more experiments,
which is never going to happen. You will, however, see the glowing pickle as a thumbnail if you happen to be follow us on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
which is at Lobby and Lab. Why Lobby and Lab? Because I used to have two shows, and I never changed my Twitter handle, so.
Why bother?
But you should join us on Twitter. It's fun. You'll get to see things like a glowing pickle and a picture of the bear that Jake saw.
The bear. Eating garbage.
This is all your fault, you know.
Yeah.
I was in the middle of something talking about secondary messenger cascades. I mentioned plants do this.
Uh-huh.
You're like, plants have memory?
Yeah, well.
Yeah, well, so I did a little digging.
Mm.
Well, first off, let's talk about plant communication.
That's a thing?
That's a thing!
Okay.
Way back in the 1960s, this guy named Clive Baxter got to playing around with a polygraph.
Okay.
I thought this was the same guy who invented the polygraph, but it is not. That was somebody else. He was just playing with it.
He's like, neat.
He was just sitting there, and he was looking at a potted plant in his office, and he poured some water in it, and he got to thinking, I wonder how long it takes for the water to reach the leaf.
Mm-hmm.
So he hooks up his polygraph to the leaf, figuring that once the water gets to the leaf, the lines will wiggle.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So what he saw reminded him of a human subject when they are relaxed.
Huh.
He's like, this plant is kicking back.
It's a plant. Huh? It's the definition of relaxed. It's not going anywhere.
Right. So life is good. Yeah, then he started wondering, I wonder how I can stress this plant. And I was like, you can't ask it a question and expect it to try and lie. Plants generally don't do that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
He tried several things. He wasn't seeing any sort of reaction. And then he thought, I'm going to burn that leaf.
Wow. This'll stress it.
Before he burnt the leaf, when he merely thought of it, the polygraph suddenly went crazy. All the lines squiggling all over the place.
Okay.
So he figured that plant had reacted to his intention to burn it.
Okay.
Right. Apparently it never occurred to him that maybe that water had just now reached the leaf.
Remember when you started this?
But he went on and did other quote-unquote experiments.
Mm-hmm.
And these were not rigorous. There were no controls. He would do things like drive home and look at the polygraph and go, oh, yeah, I was thinking about the plants, you know. But he called it primary perception, and he wrote some books and got lots of attention and various articles in very, you know, the news people got excited.
Well, they do that.
But no one has been able to replicate these experiments. Can't do it again.
Okay.
Probably not true. Not even him. Apparently, he refused to try.
Okay.
Because, you know, he doesn't want to find out he's wrong. That doesn't mean that plants can't communicate. Right?
All
right. I was reading up on this stuff that Baxter came up with. And one of the arguments against it is, like, plants don't have any sensory organs. Therefore, they can't have extrasensory perception.
But some
which is an flowers. Awful, weak, awful argument.
Yeah.
First off, extrasensory perception specifically is supposed to be working without your regular sense organs.
Right.
So not having one shouldn't preclude it.
Yeah, you can have no senses. Therefore, every perception is an extrasensory. Yeah.
Secondly, plants do too have sensory. The sunflower being an example.
I was thinking of that.
Climbing vines. They have a primitive sense of touch. Mm-hmm. So they know which way to grow in order to climb up something.
Yeah, okay.
They can also tell which direction gravity is coming from.
Those things are tenacious.
Then there are little hormones that plants produce.
Mm-hmm.
Their own planty hormones. They can happen when they're getting eaten, when they're sick, or when they get damaged. And they will actually pump these out into the air.
Okay.
Now, this was discovered in the early 1980s, more or less by accident. Somebody was studying a tree and how it reacted to an insect infestation.
Oh, okay.
They're looking at the various chemicals the plant is producing in order to say, go away, bugs. And then they went over to what they thought was the control tree.
Okay.
Not infected. But in the same room. And it turns out that tree had done everything that the first actually infected tree had done.
Oh, okay.
Well, probably because of the lingering effects of good old Baxter, this was widely poo-pooed.
Oh, okay.
And mind you, the magazines were all excited about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
But some other people found that they couldn't replicate it. It wasn't very well controlled.
Uh-huh.
And interest, and more importantly, funding, dried up.
Oh, well.
But it came back, and it has since been verified. Been verified a lot. And there's a number of different ways that plants will communicate.
Okay.
You are sort of stretching a point here. It does, the plant may not necessarily deliberately be trying to tell other plants that something is wrong.
Right.
It's just sending out this chemical because that's what it does.
Something sucks. to anybody that cares.
And then other plants pick up on that same chemical and react just as though they had produced it themselves. It's interesting because it actually crosses species.
Oh, neat.
Like the poplar tree can be infected by this bug.
Uh-huh.
And nearby tomato plants start producing insect anti-bug chemicals.
Huh. Hey, cool.
Yeah. And then that's through the air, various chemicals. There are plants that communicate via their roots.
Okay.
This is actually complicated. In forests,
okay,
some of these trees will share sugars through their roots. Both their roots and an associated fungal network.
So, trees.
Trees.
Fungal network.
You betcha.
Okay.
And they, again, this will happen between species, although there are a lot of trees that will preferentially send resources to their own young.
Oh.
So there they are, recognizing their own children. Tell me about how plants don't have sensory organs again.
It takes a forest.
But what about any sort of cognition, any sort of memory?
Oh, okay.
All right. Here we had, in order to study this, we're going to talk about some of the plants that can move.
Okay.
There are a number of them, but let's start with the Venus flytrap.
Okay.
This thing has a little trap. Its leaves have evolved into this like little tiny fanged mouth. Inside of that little trap are some sensory hairs.
Right.
When one gets touched, nothing happens.
Right.
But if another one, not the same one, gets touched within 30 seconds, the leaf trap will snap shut.
Right.
Does it within less than tenths of a second. It's really quick.
Neat trick.
Doesn't quite close all the way. If it keeps getting stimulated on those little hairs, it will close the rest of the way.
Aha.
If it gets at least five touches, it starts producing enzymes to dissolve said bug.
It sucks to be you.
So this is a trick the flytrap has developed so that if like a pebble or a drop of water actually, you know, it closes on something that isn't a bug. There's no wiggling around. There's no point in closing your leaf trap completely and making those enzymes. That takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Anyway, open the leaf back up, let whatever it is fall out and try again. But note that this plant is somehow remembering how often it has had those hairs touched.
Okay.
It is counting.
Weird. When? Why? How?
Yeah, well, nobody knows is the problem. We have another plant capable of rapid movement called Mimosa pudica. It's got a bunch of nicknames. My favorite one is the tickle me plant.
Okay.
It's a funny little bush. When you touch, it's a frond.
Okay.
It's kind of like a fern-looking thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The little tiny leaflets curl up and that branch drops.
Neat.
Ask me why.
Why?
I don't know. There are theories that maybe it's to keep from evaporating too much. Maybe it's just to get out of the way so that they don't get stepped on. Maybe it's to knock an insect off of the branch.
These are all good ideas.
These are all good ideas, but it does cost energy when they do this.
Yeah.
And for one thing, the leaf isn't there soaking up the sun anymore.
Right, right.
That's an issue. So they have done a lot of studies with this plant because it reacts in a visible way very quickly. So you can decide whether or not it is habituating or learning a particular stimulus.
Oh.
And yes, yes it does.
What?
What they would do, one study, just for an example, they would drop little drops of water on it and the leaves would close. And they'd keep this up. And eventually the plant just ignored it.
Stop.
As an interesting aside, when grown in a shade, so they get less sunlight, they learned quicker to ignore it.
Okay.
And then, to make sure it wasn't just not closing because it was exhausted, they'd touch it with a finger or shake the branch, and it would still close. So it has learned the difference between drops of water and being touched by a finger.
I mean, we do this But we have a brain.
We have a brain. Again, nobody really knows how this is happening. There's interesting implications for us, because if it's learning and it's doing it without nerves.
Yeah.
Presumably, maybe there's some sort of changing in the ion channels. Uh-huh. You can't just look at synaptic weights. There are no synapses to look at. Maybe some sort of different genes are being expressed. But it suggests that there is a kind of memory, mm-hmm. even though it's very, very simple, that doesn't require a brain.
Full body learning. All right, I got a new news story for you. Oh, crap.
Anyway, that's about as far down the weird planty rabbit hole that, well, would you call it a rabbit hole? The plant hole.
That sounds wrong. That does- I don't
know. That's as far down that particular rabbit hole as I want to go. Mm. So we will be back next week with more stuff. See you then.
Bye.